Hello and welcome to Press TV News Analysis. I'm Kaveh Tahvayi. As the humanitarian situation in Syria worsens, portrayed to be the fault of the Syrian government forces, even though insurgents are to a large degree at fault, cracks between supporters of these insurgents are growing wider. The growing presence of al-Qaeda extremists has created fear and uncertainty. Britain has come out to say that it is now concerned about them. We ask, how much of the blame should be placed on countries who have provided training and weapons to these insurgents? That question and much more in this edition of the Press TV News Analysis.
A UK Foreign Office spokesperson tells Press TV that Britain seeks a diplomatic solution to the crisis in Syria. Dima Naman says London is concerned about the presence of terrorist groups in the country. The spokesperson also says London has not severed its ties with the Syrian government. The latest stance by the Foreign Office is in stark contrast with the way Britain, and in general the West, has been trying to lead the situation in Syria. Some analysts say Britain's most recent position could signal that while the UK acknowledges war crimes by the insurgents in Syria, it seeks to acquit itself of any involvement in the bloodshed.
In fact, they are involved. They are in Syria for 20 months, and they, MI6 and intelligence services, are everywhere in Syria, are in Turkey, are providing training and intelligence services to those insurgents, whoever those insurgents they are.
Behind the UK's seemingly peaceful stance on Syria, the reality on the ground is very much different. US media reports say Washington and London have been providing training for the Syrian insurgents in Jordan. The training programs in Jordan are reportedly focused on teaching the insurgents how to use sophisticated anti-aircraft weapons. Back in October, the New York Times also reported that the Obama administration secretly and without the consent of Congress sent more than 150 U.S. forces to Jordan, in part to be positioned as a contingent force should the turmoil in Syria expand into a wider conflict. A CNN report last week, citing a senior U.S. official and several senior diplomats, said the U.S. and some of its European allies, quote, are using private contractors to train Syrian militants. The U.S., Britain and France have already recognized the armed opposition in Syria. London has gone as far as promising financial support for the insurgents. One of the main gateways for the flow of arms and militants to Syria is the neighboring Turkey's border. Now, a former Turkish minister says some 10,000 Taliban militants are using a refugee camp in Turkey's Hatay province as a base to go into Syria. Namik Kemal Zeybek says the Taliban militants launch attacks on Syrian government targets and then return to Hatay base. The Turkish government itself is working with Western countries and their Arab allies in the region to topple the Syrian government. Most recently, Ankara secured the agreement of the Pentagon and the German cabinet to deploy Patriot missiles near the Syrian border. Back to the UK's expression of concern over terrorist groups gaining a foothold in Syria, the question remains, how can the West speak of a diplomatic solution when it's openly supporting armed insurgency in the violence-hit country?
Let me introduce our guest for this edition of the Press TV News Analysis. Former U.S. Senate Foreign Policy Analyst James Dutras joins us from Washington. We have Chairman of the Arab Media Watch, Sharif Nashashibi, joining us from London. And from the International Action Center, Caleb Maupin joins us from New York. Gentlemen, welcome. Caleb Maupin, 2012 is almost over and tens of thousands of innocent people have died in Syria. The insurgents responsible for many of these deaths. How much of this lies squarely on their foreign-backed supporters like the United States, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia?
Well, any notion that this is some kind of domestic uprising in Syria should be thoroughly refuted by the facts that we have seen now. The money is coming from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, which is a U.S. client state. Money is also coming from Turkey, which is a member of NATO. The British are training these rebels and giving them aid. German submarines are providing intelligence. This is a Western-backed regime change operation, plain and simple. The Syrian government is a part of a world alliance of countries that are standing up to the United States, whether it's Venezuela, Venezuela, you know, Cuba, Iran, China. They're in a world alliance against the banks and corporations that have run the world for so long. And the Western corporations don't like that, and they are creating violence and chaos in Syria in order to destabilize that government and impose their will. We've seen what happens. Whenever the U.S. overthrows governments, things get worse. In Libya, look at Libya. They had the highest life expectancy on the African continent, and now they've been destroyed. We need to stand and oppose U.S. intervention in Syria, which is all this is. This is not a domestic uprising. This is U.S. intervention. It's the same thing that was done in Nicaragua with the Contras. These rebels are horrible. They've been cutting people's heads off, beheading people, forcing children to behead people. These are mass murderers in Syria. These are terrorists, and we need to oppose them. And people in the United States need to realize it is not in our interest to support our government in destabilizing the Syrian state.
Sharif Nashashibi, what about that viewpoint that our guest there has? I mean, there are these insurgent groups of different sects, of different ideologies, and of course some of the horrific war crimes, as has been stated, occurring there. I mean, should this be squarely on the shoulders of these countries that are supporting these insurgents, these killings that have gone on?
We're ignoring the elephant in the room, which is the fact that these atrocities are being committed by both sides. Both sides are receiving backing from foreign governments, and these foreign backers have their own agendas. It is completely pointless and unreal to try and talk of the situation as if this is only happening on one side. Now, your guest saying that this is not a domestic revolution, look, we can argue the rights and wrongs of foreign backing of both sides, and he only thinks it happens on one side. But to say that it is not a domestic revolution is a joke. It's a sick joke, actually. They might be getting support from outside, and they are. But to say that this is not a domestic revolt is I don't know what to say to that. This is just unreal. I mean, he's sitting very comfortably in America, in a democracy, extolling the virtues of dictatorships from Syria to Libya to wherever. I mean, this is just incredible. I don't know what he's talking about.
We're going to have him respond to that momentarily, Caleb Mopan. Do hold your thoughts. But James Jotras, let's talk about these different insurgent groups and, of course, mercenaries that are mixed in there, running rampant in Syria, so much so that a 30-member military command center was apparently needed to be formed, headed by this General Salim Idris, who it is said defected from the Syrian army. Now, he said that he hopes, and I underline that word, to transform largely autonomous groups of fighters, whoever they are, into a unified force. Not a good sign, 18 months into this or a little bit more, of a hope of trying to contain these insurgents.
It's really a very sick joke. We really have a situation where the United States and our closest allies in NATO, the Saudis, the Gulf states, Turkey, of course, have once again planted our flag on solid support of the most radical Sunni groups, which is a pattern we followed in Afghanistan, in Bosnia, in Kosovo, in Libya, and now in Syria. And then, as we help to bring these very violent people to power, we then express concerns about, oh, wait a minute, there are elements of Al-Qaeda here. I hope we can control that. Where do they think Al-Qaeda came from in the first place? Where do they think the Taliban came from in the first place? As a product of American and Saudi and other Western support in Afghanistan, and the pattern has been replicated in many countries since. What's particularly upsetting to me as an American, and I must say as a Christian, is that we see the kind of carnage this has resulted in the Christian community in places like Libya, like in Iraq in particular, and now we see this at the hands of U.S.-supported rebels in Syria, which, if they take power, will have the predictable consequence for the Christians in that country. It is a policy that is inhumane, insane, and illegal.
Caleb Mopan, our guest Sharif Nashashibi had questions about your statements, if you have a response to him.
Absolutely, I'd be happy to respond to that. The way you can tell that this is not a domestic uprising is by the fact that the rebels continue to call for NATO intervention because they don't have support on the ground. Just like in Libya, whenever they were forced to face the Libyan government, the Libyan rebels all of a sudden called for Western intervention because that was the only way they could win. They do not have mass support. And we see this in Syria, that, you know, repeated calls. Whenever they're forced to actually fight the Assad forces, they lose. So now they want NATO and the U.S. to come in and do it for them. It is
U.S.
Western...
don't don't have domestic support. It's because they don't have the
weapons to fight
them. This
debate is not about Assad. This is not a debate about Assad. This is a debate about whether the U.S. imperialists have the right to go in and destroy Syria. That's what I'm upset about. I don't want to have a debate about whether the Assad regime did this or that.
They don't have the right to go in.
I am talking about the U.S. Doesn't mean that they don't have domestic support. The U.S. has its guns pointed at the Syrian people, and it's time to stand against that threat. My tax dollars as a person living in the United States are going to fund one of the most ruthless murderers, these Syrian rebels that are going around cutting people's heads off. I'm opposed to that. I'm standing against that. And I don't think the Syrian people have to pass some tests before I oppose what these rebels are doing. What these rebels are doing is outrageous. And we need to stand against that. And I am not going to sit here and talk about both sides. There's not two sides in this. The two sides going on there is U.S. imperialism, which is seeking to destabilize and destroy a country. And there is those who oppose it. And I'm one of those people who opposes what the U.S. does around the world. I'm against the U.S.
Dictatorship in Syria? Is this the other side that you're so happy about? Sorry, the dictatorship is what you're happy about? This has to be the choice between atrocities by rebels and atrocities by a dictatorship? This is the choice?
Well, let's move on. Sharif Nashashibi, you're in London. Tell us about the U.K. stance, which is kind of puzzling. The U.K. Foreign Office told Press TV that the British government is now concerned about these insurgents or terrorist attacks against civilians. Wanted the political solution, had not severed its diplomatic relations with the Syrian government. Can you explain that to us?
Right. The explanation is exactly the same as other countries that are backing different parties in the region. For example, the UK says it wants dialogue, but it's helping the opposition. Iran says it wants dialogue, but it supports and helps the Syrian government. Russia does the same. Turkey does the same. They're all these countries that are involved in the Syrian conflict, they are all talking dialogue, but behind everyone's backs are supplying the regime or the opposition, whichever, in Syria. Talk of dialogue, it's lip service. It's lip service. But all sides are actually arming the side they support in Syria for a military solution.
Good point. Let's get James Jatras for a response. Go ahead, James Jatras.
Yes, I don't think we can equate the two things, because the Western powers, led by the United States, have started with the a priori non-negotiable demand and condition that the only conceivable outcome in Syria is that the Assad government must be removed. We only want to talk about how to get from A to B, how to achieve that. We've already decided what the outcome must be. I don't think talk of dictatorship really moves the ball here. Does anybody think that the rebels are going to bring anything close to like a democracy or a tolerant society to power? It's not a question of democracy versus dictatorship. It's a question between one regime, which is relatively secular, relatively open, certainly according to Western standards of democracy, versus probably something led by the Muslim Brotherhood, if not something even more radically Islamic, that would take its place. This is what the Western powers are supporting with our democratic Saudi friends. I don't think you can equate this to the Russians and the Iranians and other countries that are supporting the Syrian government, which is a recognized international government. And they're not demanding, a priori, any particular outcome. If the United States and our allies would drop the demand for Assad's ouster and say, okay, fine, let's agree on a ceasefire, let's agree with a suspension of aid to all of the warring sides, and let's have a genuine negotiation with no preconditions and with an open-ended outcome, I think the other side would go for that. But it's the Western powers that are rejecting that possibility.
And Caleb Maupin, you made a very interesting point there, that you don't want to talk about Assad. You want to talk about the fact that your tax dollars are paying these insurgents to fight inside Syria. Expand more on that for us.
Well, it's very interesting, you know, when people try to equate what's going on, the U.S. aid. You know, when countries around the world like Cuba, Venezuela, Iran, Russia, you know, when they have solidarity between each other in their effort to fight foreign domination and solidarity, come together and have a united global fight against the Western banks and corporations that try to dominate the world, that is in no way the same thing as when the U.S. sends terrorist thugs to commit crimes and destabilize and overthrow governments. The fact that the other guests would equate those things is disgusting. I mean, it's not the same thing. The Western banks and corporations, Wall Wall Street runs the world, and they enforce their rule with murder around the world, with drone strikes, with rebel terrorists killing people, and the people of the world are uniting to oppose that with different ideologies, different religions, but they all stand against the Western imperialists. And that's a beautiful thing, and it's nothing like what Washington, D.C. and Wall Street are doing.
Sheriff Nashashibi, do you think there's going to be military intervention? Do you have a response to Caleb Bonpan before I ask the question, or could I continue?
You know, not really. I don't know where to begin with him. So please ask your question.
Okay, let's talk about this military intervention that is set to be in the works. We're looking at the scenario where chemical weapons allegations are being thrown about, the Patriot missile deployments, and of course the article that came out by The Independent that there's a plan to provide these insurgents with air and naval power. This was hosted by the head of Britain's armed forces in London, and it had Turkey, Jordan, Qatar, and the UAE, and a three-star American general, we understand, in that meeting. Do you think there's going to be a military intervention?
Well, I mean, I don't think there's going to be direct military intervention in the sense of foreign boots on the ground. I don't think that's going to happen because there's no appetite for it from any country. This would be a quagmire, and this would be opposed even by people in Syria who oppose the regime. If you're talking about the kind of military help that, say, NATO provided to Libya, I don't even think that's going to happen either. There's no consensus for that kind of military aid. The opposition hasn't formally asked for that kind of aid. So at the moment, what I think we're going to have is really what we have at the moment, is that individual countries deciding to unilaterally support whichever side or faction of that side that they want to support. This may be more streamlined now that the opposition is more unified, but I don't think we're going to have any kind of, you know, NATO air power supporting the rebels, or certainly not any foreign military boots on the ground. I don't think that's going to happen. There's no consensus. So at the moment, there is just a drive by various countries to channel their own arms into the side they support. And this is now obviously being accelerated and by the fact that the opposition is more unified. But absolutely, there will not be any kind of invasion or NATO intervention. I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, this thing keeps popping up, James Dutras, over and over again, the unification or lack of it for the opposition. And now it has, it's called the National Coalition, with its new leader, Ahmad Muaz al-Khatib. And also, of course, insurgents not being unified. When do you think they're going to get unified? Are they going to be successful in that? And is that going to be the key for them in terms of pursuing their agenda in Syria?
No, I don't think that all of this talk of unification of the rebel groups really means much of anything. We talk about this all the time. We talk about it in Libya. We talked about it in Kosovo until we, you know, picked our designated group of thugs that we supported there. I think that's the sideshow. I think the only thing we can really predict is that if these people did come to power, they will be very, very bad, just like nobody bothers to look at what the wreckage is in Libya after we left there. I would like to also refer to the earlier point about whether there will be an intervention. You can't talk of intervention just in terms of boots on the ground or even an air campaign like we saw in Libya and in Kosovo. The fact is that providing weapons and funds to insurgent terrorist groups is already an intervention. It is already an illegal act of aggression against a recognized sovereign state. So the idea that somehow there, will there will or not be an intervention is not the question. The question is, will there be an escalation?
Omar Nashashibi, hold your question. Go ahead. Go ahead, Omar Nashashibi.
I'm really surprised that your guests believe that and I agree in the sense that it's wrong to provide arms to any person or group that commits atrocities, but that somehow supplying arms to a government that causes atrocities is somehow okay. Why is one atrocity somehow better than the other? I'm against all atrocities.
I agree about atrocities too, but it seems to me the person who starts the war has to take the responsibility, especially when it's an outside power committing aggression. There are many cases. Let's take, for example, Turkey and a Kurdish insurgency. If an outside power was supplying weapons to the PKK to launch attacks within Turkey and the Turkish government responded, the United States would be first first on the spot to say we fully support the Turkish government, no matter how heavy-handed they came down on the insurgents and on the civilians who supported them. You know, we're very selective when it comes to who's committing atrocities.
I'm not being selective. I'm actually being the opposite of that. I'm saying that atrocities are being committed on all sides. Are you telling me, though, that the government committed atrocities
are somehow different
the
war.
Or better?
But I mean, I'm saying let's not put the cart before the horse. When an outside power supports rebel terrorist groups against the government and the government responds with force and atrocities are also committed by that government as are by the rebels, to whom does responsibility belong? To the aggressor or to the home government defending its territory?
So when outside governments supply a government, in this case in Syria, to commit atrocities against its own people, to violently suppress demonstrations that started peacefully, this is okay?
That was 18 months ago, or maybe a little bit more into that, though, isn't it?
I don't agree with you on the premise. That we've seen this in other cases where a political opposition that is not successful turns into a violent opposition supported by outside powers. The principle of sovereignty is that a recognized government has a monopoly of the use of force within its territory that cannot be usurped by outside powers who arm what are frankly terrorists in order to provoke the sovereign government in a way that will then justify outside intervention. Again, we saw that in Kosovo, we saw that in Libya, we're seeing that again here in Syria.
Let's bring in Caleb Mopan. I can't have him be left out here. Caleb Mopan, and to add, hold your thoughts there, Sharif Nashashibi. Caleb Mopan, to add more to the pot, and in the mix, now you have reports of this Turkish official that, 10,000 Taliban militants are being trained in Hatay province to carry out attacks against government forces.
Good Democrats
Syria.
All. I'm sure all these Taliban are very good Democrats.
It is interesting that the other guest, you know, his criticism of the Assad regime has something to do with democracy. But if you ever look at these rebels, the idea that they would set up some kind of democracy is outrageous. Just look at what they're doing and what they're saying. These are not forces that want anything that would be any better for Syria than what is already there. It would be far, far, far worse. And on top of that, I believe that every country in this world has the right to self-determination and the right to resist domination by the Western banks and corporations, by Wall Street, which runs the world. And I don't think that people have to pass any political, ideological test in order to resist foreign domination and foreign oppression. So the people of Syria have the absolute right to resist this U.S.-backed operation of destabilizing the country. That's all there is to it. If he wants to make it about something else, you know, he can do that. But that's not the viewpoint that people around the world have. People see what the U.S. has done to the world, and they see what the banks and corporations have to offer, and they're rejecting it. And that's a beautiful thing.
Sharif Nashashibi, 30 seconds if you have any closing comments.
Yes, I am against any dictatorship, whether it's secular or theocratic. And if the rebels turn Syria into another dictatorship, I would be as much against them as I am the Assad regime. But I'm not going to sit there like your guest here and turn the show into some kind of conspiracy theory where somehow a secular dictatorship is great. And this means that they can suppress Syrians because there may be U.S.-backed rebels there. I'm against U.S. imperialism
okay,
as well.
I'm going to turn now to
but
James
it doesn't
Jatross.
Mean that you
I'm
can't
sorry.
Support the riot Syrians to their to
sorry.
To
James
determine
Jatross,
our future.
Sorry, 30 seconds, your closing comments.
I'm sorry, to whom?
For you, James Jatross, 30 seconds.
I think a secular dictatorship is far better for most people's lives in terms of the integrity of a religiously and ethnically diverse country than empowering one group, in this case the Muslim Brotherhood and even more radical groups like al-Nusra, to say go ahead and impose a theocratic dictatorship on the majority of Syrians who don't want it. How is that an improvement? It seems to me it's less humane, more violent, and more of a danger to the region.
Thank you very much. Let me thank all our guests, former U.S. Senate Foreign Policy Analyst talking there, James Jatross from Washington, Chairman of the Arab Media Watch, Sharif Nashashibi, thank you, talking to us from London, and International Action Center, Caleb Mopan, who gave us his comments from New York. And thank you for watching another edition of the Press of India's Analysis. From Mikhail Vitafoy and the entire team in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.